What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Johnny Mac here. Just wanted to give you a heads up that if you are looking for a community that is open to discussion as far as mentorship, conservation, the wild, becoming a better person, and all of that, there is a group for you on Facebook, and it is called Soul Seekers. Soul Seekers, we are all about making ourselves a better person. We're all about making sure hunting lasts for generations to come and encouraging people to get plugged in. Whether you are someone who has something to give or someone who needs to soak it up like a sponge, this is a community for you, and I strongly encourage you that if you're on Facebook to join Soul Seekers, and if you're not on Facebook, hop on there just for that group. It is only going to be as powerful as we all make it. And so just remember that life happens for you. It doesn't happen to you. And that you can't outgive good. You can't outgive good, people. I want you to understand that. And I want you to believe it. Because when we believe that and we lead with courage and we lead with intention, lives are changed. Lives are transformed. Just like on this podcast, Transformation Through Primal Adventure. Be blessed. Enjoy this episode. Talk soon. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I'm on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters, both new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. The Soulful Hunter Podcast is also proudly presented by the Crazy Elk Company. Based out of the state of Washington with products made in America, they are providing solutions with gear to problems you didn't even know you had. Their tag wallet is one of those solutions, and I had the pleasure of using it on all of my hunts this last year, and it is now a mainstay in my kill kit. The tag wallet is a water-resistant zippered pouch that comes with its own reusable zip ties to safely and securely store your notch tag for quick and easy access. For more information, go to crazyelkcompany.com and use the code SOULFUL with a capital S to save 20% at checkout. Be blessed, everyone, and as always, stay soulful. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack, and today I got a cool guest on, and someone who is a local Western Washington hunter and someone who is breaking into the hunting industry and creating their own game calls, and that is Cody Sanchez from Linguist Game Calls down in Chehalis, Washington. And I wanted to reach out to Cody because when we talk predator hunting, and when we've talked to predator hunting on this podcast with like Al Morris and other people, it always ends up being discussions around like these big Eastern Washington tracts of land, desert style, sagebrush. But at the end of the day, for all you listeners who live in the west side of the state of Washington where it's just dumping rain and thick brush, how do you go about hunting coyotes? Because at the end of the day, they're still here. And so I wanted to invite Cody on to talk all about hunting coyotes, predator calling, and specifically hunting coyotes in the thick brush. Cody, thank you so much for coming on for this episode of The Soulful Hunter.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on, and I think it's a good opportunity for me.
Heck yeah, brother. Well, give the listeners a little background on yourself. Obviously, Linguist Game Calls is something that is relatively newer, but take us through. What do you do for a living? How'd you come up with Linguist Game Calls, all that?
Well, I've always been obsessed with calling animals of any kind. It all started with predator calls, obviously. That was the first thing that really drew my attention back in the day when I was pretty young, I think around 12 years old. I've always been obsessed with it. I got my first call was a Primo's hot dog howler. I seen it on a commercial and I really wanted one, and I ended up getting one that Christmas, and I just dove into it heavy. I mean, I watched Randy Anderson DVDs, you know, everything I could. I just soaked it all in, and going into like that Western Washington stuff, you know, I was watching the DVDs and I could operate the calls really well, and I was doing as best I could to mimic all those calls and going through the sets and everything the way that Randy Anderson was doing them, and I wasn't having success. And I learned quick that coyote hunting was definitely not something you picked up right away, but I've always been obsessed with calling, so that's where it kind of steamed the passion. Once I started getting the hang of it, I really just dove into it. And so calling for me has always been my number one passion as far as hunting goes. And I've always dreamed of being able to make my own calls. And back in the day, I used to do a lot of waterfowl hunting. I really dove into that too. And that really kind of petered out, and predator hunting came back. And once I started doing that more, I just thought it'd really be cool to make my own game calls. So I ended up looking into it a little more and getting the presses that I need to make the diaphragm calls, because I always thought diaphragm calls made the best howls and predator sounds. So I started making the diaphragm calls, and just for myself at first, just to use and to have, and then it just kind of steamrolled into something that I thought I could sell, that I made a good enough call that sounded good, and I went from there, and it just got better and better to where I got calls that I really thought sounded great and was enough for me to have the confidence to start Linguist Game Calls and start selling these things.
I love it. When did Linguist Game Calls come to fruition?
Well, it was about 3 years ago. I first heard the term in a elk hunting video. It was called The Linguist.
With Corey Jacobson and his son. Yeah. Yep.
And I thought, so cool, and he was talking about all the mavericks, of the ones that, the founders basically of the elk calling world. And I dove into it more. And when I was coming up with a name, I really, started looking into that definition and being skilled in multiple languages and foreign languages. And I just thought that kind of was really fitting. I thought that was really cool. And it was something I really wanted to go with, because for me, it's always been about, for the calling things, learning how to use the calls is one thing, but knowing what to say and when to say was always a big thing. Is diving more into the language. It's not just perfecting the call itself, but knowing what you're doing with the call, so and how you're saying it. So there really is a language there, and so I really kind of dove into it that way, and I really thought it was fitting overall for what I was trying to accomplish.
Man, that's beautiful. Okay, so let's talk about calling and predator calling, because it seems like, at least by the way, let me take a step back. I got into hunting specifically to coyote hunt. I was always a proponent of the Second Amendment. Bought my first, I had a handgun, I had a 22 long rifle, and then when it came time to get my first rifle, I got an AR because I was coaching multiple sports, and at that time, I just got my hunter safety class, and you can hunt coyotes year-round, so it wasn't a competition with high school football and weekend warrior status and all that. And so I was like, dude, I'm going to go hunt coyotes. Little did I know that hunting coyotes is super addicting and super challenging at the same time, and it took me a long time to even call in my very first coyote. I was like you. I was watching every single Randy Anderson video and Al Morris and whatever I could get my hands on. Shout out to John Collins back east. But a lot of these hunters were always hunting cow pastures and these desert lands. And for me, being in Western Washington, and this is before I really understood the whole concept of committing to a hunt, I thought you could go out to one stand and have it be good enough, and you would have coyotes in your lap as long as you're blowing a rabbit in distress call. But it turns out it's not the case. So before we even get into calling, and I think this is something that needs to be addressed for people who want to get into predator hunting, is do you do any sort of scouting beforehand, or do you just pick a location and go in blind and expect coyotes to be there? What is your process before you are even going to field?
Well, it's a pretty loaded question, I guess, in a way, because it depends on where you're hunting and what type of terrain you're going to be hunting. So For us, we hunt a lot of private land fields, just by permission. Dairy farms, cattle farms, even a lot of our problem coyote calls that we get that will go on that kill the cat or hurt a dog, are in little 1-2 acre pieces, you know, that are just thick timber. So those places like that, we obviously know there's coyotes. There's always going to be coyotes at dairy farms and cattle farms and these places where there's a problem coyotes. Obviously there's coyotes there because there's a problem. And we're always scouting. I mean, when we're cruising from spot to spot at night, we'll see coyotes in places and keep a note of that and be something we look into in the future. But when you're hunting public land, say, or timberland of any sort here in Western Washington, yeah, you're definitely scouting. You could go into almost any timber patch here in Western Washington and you're pretty much going to find a coyote. But to know better where they're at, when I'm deer hunting, I'm always scouting for coyotes. I mean, when I'm elk hunting, when we're pounding the thickets here in Western Washington, we're always scouting for coyotes. Where we're hearing them in the mornings when we're diving into the timber down in a drainage creek bottom and you hear them there every morning in those same areas, it's pretty easy to understand that that's where they're at, you know. Or in the evenings right before dark when you're deer and elk hunting, we'll hear them light up in the same areas every time. And then it's a matter of jumping to Onyx and looking at that area and saying, okay, those coyotes were howling here. What's the wind doing usually? And how can we get in on them and sneak in real close and make our set, you know? So yeah, we're always scouting for sure. I mean, especially in that public, in the timberlands, because you know, as well as I do, it's, you don't see a whole lot of coyotes out there.
No, you don't. They're there, but you don't see them very often. So when you say you're scouting, what are you specifically looking for? How do you go about your Western Washington style scouting? Are you letting out, like when I talked to Al Morris not too long ago, he says he likes to go out at nighttime and let off some howls. And then if he gets a response, then he'll mark that on his Onyx and he'll come back the next day. That's what he does. Are you doing the same thing? Or are you just looking for the freshest poop that you see or the tracks? Or what type of sign is really saying, hey, this is a heavy coyote use area?
Well, it depends, because if we do most of our scouting by taking notes during big game season when we're hunting, when we go to hunt spots in the woods, because you'll see a lot of poop in the roads, tracks, you know, stuff like that. And if you see lots of scat in the road, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a heavy travel area there where those coyotes are traveling. But a lot of our scouting too, I think that it's come to the point where we've hunted so much fields that if you have a field with surrounding timberland behind it, you know, coyotes use those fields at night. So we'll go in there, we'll do the scouting through Onyx in that case, because we'll look at the drainages behind that field and know that those coyotes are going to be in those drainages and creek bottoms, in the heavy, thick brushed areas behind that private land. So we'll slip in close to those and make a stand. The other scouting, yeah, like howling and stuff like that, we don't do a whole lot of that. We have in the past, but usually when we're doing the scouting, usually for that type of scenario, it's during the deer and elk season. We've heard them a lot in those areas. They've gave their location up on their own without us howling. And we'll just keep memory, you know, a mental note of that and go back later and make those stands in those areas where we've heard them howl. It's basically the same thing as like what Al was saying, going and howling at night and marking the location. But for us, it's generally right in the morning or right in the evenings when you get those serenade howls, you know, those coyotes are grouped up together in an area where they're probably going to be for the day. So that's kind of where I go about that. And especially in those situations, I got a buddy who's been coyote hunting for a long time and he's had a lot of success in the public land. Chris Rogerson is his name. And he's actually one of my good coyote hunting partners. And he's done a lot of his hunting, right at daylight. Whereas I will go in to those areas that I've heard those coyotes howling a lot. I'll go in there midday, because I have a good chance they're going to be in that area laid up, you know, bedded up somewhere in those areas where you can slip in there nice and close and wake them up. So there's lots of ways to go about it like that. But as far as scouting goes, that's, you know, usually it's done in that big game season where we're hearing them a lot and then through Onyx a lot.
Okay, that's awesome. Now, one of the questions that I have, which is I was kind of shocked by when I had Douglas Bowes, the author of The Ultimate Guide to Black Bear Hunting, on recently for an episode, and he was talking about predator calling for bears and how you actually want the wind behind you so that the animals circle in front of you, which is kind of counterintuitive to everything that we know about hunting, because usually, especially like the Randy Anderson videos and all this, it's like, oh, you want a nice crosswind, or, you know, you want it in your face if you're going to be calling these wide open expanses. The issue is that Doug is a Western Washington guy, and when he goes predator hunting for black bears, he's usually shooting anywhere between 20 and 40 yards on these bears. And so he was like, no, you want it coming from your back so that these bears circle in front of you. Do you do the same sort of tactic hunting Western Washington, or do you, because I saw one of your videos you posted where you got in super tight, you had a shotgun, and you set up a camera and you're just filming yourself and you kind of squatted down and it seemed like a coyote just popped out of nowhere over your back shoulder and you were able to shoot it and get it. Do you know what video I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I don't know much about bears. I've never called bears, but when I'm going into those setups, yeah, wind is a big proponent, but if you think about it, if you're calling like I was, say, in that situation, I had a big wide open lane down the middle of me, and I had about 10-year-old jack firs, you know, trees on both sides of me. Well, if a coyote was to circle your left and right wind in that situation, and I've had it happen to me multiple times, is if they circle you to get your wind, you'll never see them because you can't see here in those situations. So a lot of it has to play into luck, to be honest with you. I mean, you have to have the consistency to make a lot of stands. I mean, that's where a lot of guys go wrong in Western Washington hunting coyotes in the timberlands is giving up, because it's, you're not going to call them in on every stand, and you're not going to see them a lot. And to set up on them, you have to try to, when you go into a stand, wind is definitely a big factor, but you have to try to give the coyotes an easy access to where they're going to disregard wind. And if you can get closer to them and you present them something realistic and subtle, your chances go way up, because a lot of times they'll disregard the wind. They won't try to get your downwind and put you a big circle on you. You're in that thick stuff with them. They feel safe, and they're just going to dive bomb in. And what I'm talking about in some of those situations is, say you got a big timber patch that's nice and open inside of it, and it butts up to a drainage or a creek or a reprod, a young plantation that's really thick. Well, you use that big timber patch like a field, like you would in the field calling situation. Well, you're going to get into that big open timber where it's nice and comfortable for them to dive on out of that thick stuff. Well, you're going to see them there, you know. So things like that is how I go about some of that thicker calling. And I won't do a whole lot of howling in that situation, just because if you know that they're in there, you want to slip in and give them something that's going to get them to rush right in. And a lot of times for me, that's just a rabbit distress. I mean, plain old rabbit distress of any kind. It's, for me, it's set up over sound. I don't think it matters. I think as long as you got a good wind left and right or in your face, and you can see both sides of you pretty decently, and you know that you're pretty close to where the coyotes are that you think, you're going to have pretty good success, I think, over time.
Now, when you say pretty close, what's the yardage that you're actually thinking of when you say if you're tucked in there pretty close?
I think if you're 150 and closer to those coyotes, it's pretty good chances. We've called them from further in timberlands, but usually it's going to happen in that first couple minutes if you do it right and you're in there close within 150 yards. Usually it's going to happen within a couple, you know, minutes, and it's going to happen fast, and it's, and you better be ready. And that's why I preach you're going to want a shotgun in that situation, because, and the only way to, I've had too many times where I go to call and I've got my AR with a one power scope or my big rifle, and I'm in a in the timber patch, and I think I can put it on 3-power and get a shot off. Well, it's just not realistic. I think with a shotgun, you just have to leave the rifle in the truck and just dedicate it to the shotgun, and that's going to make you a much better caller because you know you have to get them close. So you just got to keep at it and use that shotgun and get in those tight ranges where set yourself up where the coyote's got to be that 20 yards to see you, to see the source of the sound, and it's going to be in shooting range for you, you know. So
totally. Do you run just a standard like modified choke, or do you run a specific coyote choke, and what type of shot are you using?
I think I'm not too good on the technical stuff. I think I just have a modified choke in there. And for my shot, I use number 4 buck.
Okay.
Or the heavy shot, the dead coyote.
Yep.
I like.
Yeah. If you can find it, it seems like that stuff's hard to come by these days.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There's so many coyote hunters out there trying to scoop up all the ammo.
I love it.
I love it. Cody, so when you're talking predator calls, obviously you offer a wide variety of diaphragms and closed reeds and all that stuff. What's your go-to? What do you feel like produces the best sound or the best variety? And then do you have a couple calls handy near you? I forgot to ask you this before we hit the record button, that you might be able to let off some sounds and give an example for the listeners.
Oh yeah, I got some calls around me. As far as hand calls go, I really feel I've had the most success with a closed reed rabbit distress call. I think that if I had to take one call to hunt coyotes the rest of my life, I would probably take that. You can obviously do more with like an open reed, and I've done stuff before where I've put on a story and asked, you know, what do you prefer, an open reed or a closed reed? And it's like 10 to 1 with the open reed. And I get it because you can do so much with it. You can howl in a pinch, you know, on a short open reed call. You can do pup distress. You can do rabbit distress. I mean, and I do love open reeds for the versatility of them. But I think for the sheer sound quality, I would go with a closed reed with a little JC reed. I really think that they make and produce great rabbit distress sounds, especially for here in Western Washington. I did have a lot of success with open reeds over in Eastern Washington. I don't know if that's the tone difference, but that raspy little sound on those little closed reed calls, I think over here, just, I don't know, it works really good for me. So that's kind of my go-to favorite there, you know, as far as taking one call and doing it all. I mean, I have done, you know, a lot with a diaphragm too. I think they make the best howls. And I remember one night we were hunting a farm down the road, and we had the e-call, the batteries went out on my buddy's e-call, and I had already howled on that set with the diaphragm before he went to the e-call, and the e-call died. And so we were going to go to rabbit distress next in the call sequence, and I just took a knife out of my pocket and cut a little slit in my diaphragm and made a raspy sound, and it turned into a rabbit call just like that. So, I mean, diaphragms are great and versatile too. You can do a lot with them, but yeah, as far as that goes, I think a closed reed rabbit distress call is probably my favorite in the lineup.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. That's so when you identified a location to hunt coyotes, you got a good feeling that they're there. What are you doing? And I think one of the biggest things is it's so easy for a predator caller with an electronic call to just be like, okay, I'm going to push play and let it roll.
Yeah.
Do you, like, as someone who makes calls, are you roll your eyes at that, or what do you do? What is your trial and error that's helped yourself get to a place where you're like, okay, I feel like I know what I'm doing? And then also, what have you learned not to do?
Well, in hunting and in general for coyotes, it's no right and wrong answer, in my opinion. I really believe setup over sound is the best thing. Now, obviously, I haven't had a lot of success walking into a field where I know there's coyotes and turning on, you know, goat baby in distress or something. Off the wall stuff. I think if you stick to rabbit sounds in general, you're going to have high success. As far as letting the call just run, I haven't had a whole lot of success doing that. I have in the past, I mean, occasionally, but usually we don't just let it run forever. You know, I mean, we'll walk in, but I used to always start my stands with howls. I'd walk in. We know there's coyotes in the area. We'd howl. Why? Because we're trying to see where the coyotes are at. And I think that's pretty effective. But over the years, knowing where they're at in most of the areas that we hunt, or hearing them howl before going into that stand, knowing where they're at, I find you're way more effective slipping in close, even in a field, getting in close to that area where you think they're at. Now, there's always the oddballs that they're not where you think they are, but you're going to slip in close. You sit down, and honestly, it's no secret, I guess, but baby cottontail sounds here in Western Washington, just, I'm sure in other places too, but just absolutely are money. You know, they're fire. I mean, they're great sounds. You're going to slip in there, and if you turn on some baby cottontail distress, whether it's on the Fox Pro or whatever, it's a pretty hard way to go wrong. I mean, if there's a coyote there and your wind is right and he didn't see you on your setup or something like that, I mean, you're probably have a good chance of calling that coyote in on low volume and going from there. But yeah, so we'll usually slip in and start with something really subtle like that, whether it's on a hand call or on the e-call. I mean, either way, that's a really good way to start your set with some kind of, you know, really subtle rabbit sound.
Okay. And then what, you blow it like a few times, and then what, you're waiting for 5 minutes? I mean, take us through a little bit of a calling sequence for us.
Yeah, so we'll come in there and play. If it's on the e-call, to judge a stand time, you know, you can let that baby cottontail distress run into 3 minutes, say, you know. And if nothing's came in that 3 to 5 minutes, we'll switch. And we've had most stands are less than 10 minutes for us, and we'll put it that way, just knowing that there's coyotes there, we're going to get into the area, the wind's right, and you're going to turn on some kind of baby cottontail, and most of the time they're going to come in relatively quick. And if not, then yeah, we'll go right into either from there, we'll step it up. Maybe they didn't want to hear that. Now maybe they'll want to hear adult cottontail or the hand call closed read. And if that doesn't work, then you'll go into something else. But for me, if I'm going into a stand and I'm going to make that call, I'll start with that baby cottontail, 3 to 5 minutes, usually around 3 minutes. If nothing happens, I'm going to probably howl. And whether or not you're howling with single howls or you're going into a serenade, I don't do a whole lot of serenades. That's kind of a last ditch effort for me, but I usually get a lot of answers back with single howls. So whether that's diaphragm howls, open read howls, or with the e-call howls, I'll go into some kind of howl expecting an answer. And not always, you know, a lot of times they don't answer here, and you never figure that out why. And sometimes they're howling like crazy and sometimes they won't. I mean, there's a lot of factors there, but we'll howl. And then sometimes it's as simple as those howls, they give you silence, and then you switch to adult cottontail distress or the closed reed hand call distress, and now a coyote shows up. Was it that you triggered his greed, that those coyotes just got a rabbit, or, you know, what was it? You never will know. But for me, sound sifting like that is just keep going and switching sounds. You know, it used to be pretty strictly howl, rabbit distress, pup distress. That was kind of Randy Anderson's three stages of calling, right? You know, you start off with your howls, then you go to some kind of food, you know, rabbit distress, and then you go into pup distress. And that's a pretty sure way to do it. I mean, really, I mean, you're going to have chances. You're going to have success doing it that way. I generally start now with the rabbit distress first. And like I said, I'll start with the subtle rabbit distresses first, the high pitched stuff, the baby cottontails, just because I think they work so well. And then I'll go to my house, and then I'll go to some other rabbit distress. Now, sometimes I'll get to that second rabbit distress sequence. You know, I'll do the baby, the howls, and then I'll go to the second rabbit distress, and I still won't get something. Well, then if I know there's coyotes there, because most of these spots we're hunting, we hunt them because we know there's coyotes there. And a lot of times when we're limited to spots, we're hunting the same spots over again. And we know these coyotes are there and we know they're getting smarter. Maybe we missed one on the last time, or one came in and busted us from the back door or something. So we know that coyote's there. He's smart. Now we'll do something different. Maybe we'll move closer. Maybe we'll pick up in the set and move 150 yards to our left and try something different. It will go to some crazy sound on the e-call or do some crazy serenade with the hand calls and just try to do something different. Mimic a coyote fight, something like that. And a lot of times that works on those smarter coyotes. Or maybe, one guy starts blowing on a rabbit call and then another guy starts blowing on a coyote distress call, and you start mixing things up like that, and you kind of get off the wall at times when you have to. But knowing there's coyotes in most fields that you're hunting, if you're hunting a field at night with or in the daytime with timber around you, knowing that they're there, a lot of times it's a matter of changing your sounds up and just staying persistent with it. A lot of times it's the coyotes aren't in the area at that time. You know, we've done things where we go and call an area and don't have success. We'll go hit another stand and come back to that stand later, and now there's a coyote in the area and he comes right in. So there's so many things when it comes to calling coyotes that it's hard to pinpoint it down to this is what you need to do and this is how it's going to work. It's really hard to lay it out like that, because right, there's so many factors that really, especially
welcome to hunting, right? Ain't that the truth? So
it really,
you brought up a really interesting point. This idea, and this is something that if if we're big game hunting, we hunt certain locations over and over and over because we know animals are there. However, seasons are also only a certain amount of length.
Yeah.
When it comes to coyote hunting and then they're open year round, when you're saying how often you might return back to that same stand in the same day, but realistically, how often are you returning back to a stand? Until you know there's no more coyotes in the area, until you killed them all? Or like, do you make sure you give it a month, you give it a couple weeks? What do you keep any of this strategy in your head, or do you really just fly by the seat of your pants and say, hey, I got time and here's a good spot, might as well give it a shot?
Oh no, it's been a conversation amongst our group for a long time. You know, used to think that you can only hunt a spot, three times a year, it's going to get bad. And really, as long as you're killing the coyotes that you're calling in, I really think that you can go back and hit them again, especially if there are a lot of coyotes in that area. And coyotes coyotes are my favorite animal in the world. I mean, they're so adaptive. They're so smart. They're awesome, really, if you really think about it. And when they have an area with a really high food source, like take a dairy farm, for example, or a cattle farm or something where they're getting a lot of food, they're going to be higher numbers. They're going to produce more in their litters, and because they can handle that food source. And so those really densely populated areas, you can re-hunt those, especially if you're killing the coyotes that you're calling in. Now, if you miss, say you call two in and you miss one, that one's got that much smarter, but you still, I think you can go back and hunt those relatively quick. You start doing it more than, two times a month, and you're going to burn it out. You're going to burn yourself out pretty quick. But so it's really important to be able to rotate, and I understand it's year round, so everyone wants to hunt all the time. But really that comes down to get more spots or, hunt more other areas, because you start doing it too much, and they get smart quick, and that's another rabbit hole. You're talking two different things when you're talking hunting fields and when you're talking hunting timberlands, and also when you're talking hunting nighttime and when you're talking hunting daytime. So those are really big differences, and I can go down a lot of rabbit holes, especially with that daytime and nighttime, the fact that we have the ability to hunt nighttime here in Washington State. That's a big difference too. That was a game changer for us too. So,
well, let's go ahead. Let's break it down a little bit. And I think the whole idea of hunting pasture lands makes sense if you have access to pasture lands, but not everyone who's listening to this podcast has that ability, but they do have the ability to go out to some timberland, whether it's, you know, DNR land or some timber companies land that has some reprod or whatever. So let's talk about that specific sequence, and then let's talk about the nighttime stuff, because I believe that is something that I just bought my first spotlight this last winter, and I'm really looking forward to going out. I live close to some DNR cuts, some clearings, and I'm like, dude, this would be a great spot to go call for nighttime. However, I also don't know, I've never seen coyotes there. I haven't seen a whole lot of signs. So let's talk about those two topics.
Okay, so when you're hunting in those timberlands, like I said, I mean, it's going to go back to being persistent and making a lot of stands. And when you're seeing the scout, when you're hearing the coyotes howling, you know they're in the areas, hunting the ravines, hunting the timber next to the reprods, that kind of stuff. You just have to keep going and keep going. I mean, really, it's hard to point it into a this is how you do it kind of situation.
Yep.
It's really a get out there and keep doing it. I mean, most of the people that I talk to and try to help with, you know, I give them a lot of the same information there. And, you know, it's the fact that you have to stay consistent with it and keep doing it, and it's going to click. I mean, if you stick to the basics of going out and finding that scat or hearing them howl or making them howl by locating them with howls and slipping in within that 200 to 300 yards. And it's difficult. I really understand it's difficult, because say you're in that timberland and the coyotes howl and they're in a really hard spot to get close to, you know, you really got to jump on the Onyx or know the area in that situation to be able to get close in those situations to set yourself up. I mean, there's a lot of times where we'll hear a coyote howl and we'll be like, oh, okay, we'll get on Onyx and look at it. Like, okay, there's a road here and we can get down below them here and the wind's right. And we'll get down in there and maybe the wind switches, or we'll get down in there and be like, man, you know, you don't see all this from Onyx and it's way thicker than you thought and you can't make a good stand. So those kind of things are difficult. If a guy wants to keep it simple in the beginning, you could just call road systems and on the gravel roads and in areas like where there's lots of reprod around or where you're down in a creek bottom. You can get on those long straight stretches, or if you're using a shotgun, you can walk up to a road corner where that road turns and set yourself up 20 yards back where they're going to come around that road corner, stuff like that, where you got visibility above you. And basically in the woods like that, when you're with your downwind, when your wind's the wind hitting you in the face, you really almost have to just hope the coyotes are in front of you in a lot of stands, because in a lot of situations, if a coyote circles you, you're not going to be able to see them anyways. And so that's why it just comes down to making stand after stand after stand and really just not giving up on it, you know?
Yeah, because it can get very frustrating.
Oh, I know it.
And super defeating.
Yeah. And it's really, it can get devastating. It really can. I mean, it's even, you know, guys like me that have been doing it for a long time and have a lot of success killing coyotes. But, you know, I wish I could tell you that I call coyotes in on every stand, but if I told you that, I'd be a liar. I mean, it's just not true. You know, calling coyotes there's nothing easy about it. And that's, I think, why I love it so much. I mean, they're so vocal and it's just awesome hunting coyotes. And so that's what keeps me going after them, you know, is when you do get them in, the reward is so awesome, you know? So,
yeah, that's awesome. Okay. So you talked about the timberland, any advice for the whole nighttime hunting?
Well, the nighttime hunting thing for us started with spotlights, like most. And if you watch nighttime hunting, like the night crew, say, for example, on TV, I mean, they got coyotes coming in to 20 yards under a giant, you know, spotlight system. And it seems so awesome. And we've done that with spotlights in the past, but we learned real quick that this ties back to hitting a spot over again and again. If you're using lights, even we graduated to the red lights, just being that dimmer light, it's a lot less alarming to the coyotes, I feel. And we've had a lot of success with red lights, wicked lights specifically back in the day. If you're using lights though, I feel like coyotes they adapt to it so much quicker. And if you call, say, two coyotes in, at night, and you only get the one, because a lot of times with lights, it's hard to get that second coyote, finding them again once you shoot the one, you know, to get a double. So that second coyote has a lot of things to associate with the next time you go in and hunt that area, if that coyote's in the area. The sound, you know, the setup, and that light, you know, he can associate things. So we found that coyotes can get real smart to lights real quick. And we've definitely felt that theory tested many times, because, you know, we'll go into a stand, call a pair in, kill one, go back and make that stand. Now all of a sudden that coyote pops out, we see him and he spins and he's gone when the light hits him, you know. So that the nighttime thing can be a little tricky with the lights. Definitely give your spots more time if you're using lights. Now, here's the big obvious: thermals and night vision optics. And it's definitely a big leap, and I understand that, and that's why it's not something that you talk about too often, because not a whole lot of people want to spend the money on the thermals and night vision. Because you got to have some serious dedication to be hunting coyotes to justify the prices of those optics. But you talk about a game changer in that aspect, especially where we hunt here. I mean, once we went lightless and go total darkness, the scales start tipping in your favor greatly. I can tell you that. As far as that goes, you really level the playing field out with a thermal optic or night vision optic.
What thermal do you use?
Oh, we got multiple different ones. Everyone's got something different, you know. The Bearing Optics Super Yoder is a great thermal optic for here. As far as night vision goes too, now night vision is a great way for someone to get into night hunting at a much more affordable price range too. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people are asking me about those night optics, and when the topic of night vision gets brought up, they go, usually the reaction is, whoa, I didn't think that, you know, you could get something in the night vision world that's that cheap, you know. And it's still not cheap at $500, but it's definitely a lot cheaper than most of the thermal optics on the market.
It's cheaper than $5,000.
Exactly. Big difference. And so that's kind of the big whoa factor for a lot of people, you know, is that you can get into a night hunting setup at a pretty decent price. And night vision is great. I love night vision for all the qualities of filming and everything, because we do like to do a lot of filming with our hunts, and we're not very good at it. We're not much for filming and stuff, but it's still cool to film what we can. And most all these scopes have onboard recording. So the night vision gives you that really cool footage, as far as you're seeing the animal, you know, you're seeing all his details and stuff like that, versus a thermal, you're seeing heat, you know. So we really do like using night vision in that aspect for filming and stuff like that.
What night vision gear are you running? What specific brand, so people can go take a look?
I have a Sightmark Wraith 4K Max, I think it's called. And that's a good one. Also, a good buddy of mine that hunts with me all the time, he has an ATN X-Sight 4K. And that's also a really good scope with an amazing battery life of like 18 hours or something ridiculous like that. But it makes great quality footage. You get downfalls with the night vision, but you definitely can work around it. If a guy was trying to get into night hunting, that's a great route to go. Because yeah, you're lightless still, you know, you have an infrared light, but you know, that's not visible to our eyes. So, I mean, it's still lightless and it's a great way to get started. That's for sure.
That's cool. I tell you, if I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see episode 3 of my show Soul Seekers on Carbon TV, but we actually did a coyote hunt for that episode and it was a combo of daytime hunting and nighttime hunting with spotlights. And then we had an opportunity to use a, what was it?
I did watch that. Yeah, I did watch that. You had a Thermion in that video. That's a really nice scope.
Yes, that was so much fun. But it took, that was, I got that scope in the mail like a couple days before, figured out how to sight it in and took off. And there's definitely a learning curve when it comes to thermals and night optics.
Oh yeah, it is. And it's once you get it down though, it's about the funnest thing you can do for coyote hunting around here.
I love it. Hey, Cody, where can people find your game calls? How can people support you and how can they follow along with you in your journey?
Well, you can, you know, the website is linguistgamecalls.com. There's a lot there. And also I love the interaction. I love being able to be one-on-one with people. And if someone wants to just message me on Linguist Game Calls Instagram page or Linguist Game Calls Facebook page, I love the interaction, you know, I really love it when a customer talks to me and orders something and we're talking hunting and how we can use the product and stuff like that. So I really do like that route too. So you can just message me on either one of those social media pages for Linguist Game Calls and order through direct like that, or, you know, obviously the website linguistgamecalls.com.
Man, that's awesome. I'm going to have to connect you also with the sponsor of this podcast, Ross Sharp of Crazy Elk Company. I think you guys should team up and do a little local business together. It'd be awesome. I will also make sure to have your web address and your socials in the show notes for all the listeners. Then go check that out. But man, Cody, thank you for coming on, talking predator hunting, talking all about one of my favorite topics, and that is coyotes, man. You got any plans coming up this winter that you're really looking forward to?
Oh, yeah. The annual trip over to Eastern Washington that we do for coyote hunting is one that we look forward to every year. We save that area for once a year, and it's usually awesome hunting and it's one of my favorite trips of the year. And then, you know, now big game season's wrapped up for us, and so we're really start to hammer the predator hunting, and we'll start hunting quite a bit here coming up pretty soon. So it's my favorite time to hunt coyotes, and it's gonna be poured on heavy this winter. So we had big numbers last winter as best we could. As far as Western Washington goes, we hit a lot of milestones as far as our total number of coyotes and some personal records for, you know, coyotes and killed in one day and stuff like that. So this year, I think we're going to try to turn the focus a little more on content. So I'm looking forward to this winter, hopefully coming out with some good videos. And then I got a new lineup of hand calls that I'm working on that I'm hoping to have here pretty soon. So kind of some exciting stuff. I think it's hopefully going to be a good winter for coyote hunting.
No, it's always a good winter for coyote hunting. Come on now.
That's right.
I love it. All right. Well, Cody, thank you so much for coming on. Listeners, hope you enjoyed this episode and you have some takeaways from this that you can apply the next time you go out of field. Be blessed, everybody. I hope to see everyone at our December 11th event in Mukilteo, Washington. It is all ages are welcome. There's food and beverages to purchase, and we are raising toys and money for the first responders here in the state of Washington that have lost their jobs because of the mandates. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. I'm Johnny Mack. Freedom on, and stay soulful. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com and be sure to follow the podcast as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful. We'll be right back.